Hey, I'm Rachel Peterson, marketing expert and queen of social media. The question entrepreneurs are always asking is, how do I make social media work? How do I make money with social media for my clients and for myself? We're going to break it down on this episode of Social Media Secrets. Excited about this episode of Social Media Secrets with Rachel Peterson. Today I have a guest that I am extremely excited to talk about. It is none other than Perry Marshall, who is honestly, there's this group of people that I refer to as kind of the godfathers of marketing, the people who have gone before and they understand the timeless strategies of marketing. And I'm so honored that Perry is joining me today on the podcast. Perry, welcome.
Thank you for having me on. And, you know, I suppose it's kind of weird, like, well, you know, now like Perry's one of the grandfathers of this thing. It's like, well, it doesn't seem like it was that long ago that we were just, you know, these crazy guys, you know, doing affiliate marketing and coming up with all these strategies and inventing squeeze pages and whatever else. And now, well, I guess time goes by. But yeah, there's a lot of landmines we could probably help you not step on. So let's all keep our arms and legs, shall we?
You know what? I like that plan. What's amazing to me is that there are so many online marketers that are flash in the pan or they're popping up left and right. And one of the things that I've always wanted to do is to take my listeners into a place where we dive into timeless strategies and look at the people who have been marketing for much longer than us. Now, sorry if this makes you laugh or makes you groan. You have been marketing since I was in elementary school.
Okay, well.
Which is amazing to me. And what I love about that is that you aren't somebody that's necessarily just bobbing around like a beach ball in the ocean. You've seen great things. You've seen the recession, you've seen how it impacted businesses. Tell me a little bit, because you've been marketing now, what is it, like 20 years?
Yeah, about that. Yeah, so well, there is a cafe in New York City called Lindy's, and an awful lot of Broadway people and producers and actors and all those kind of people, they have to eat somewhere, right? So a lot of them eat there. And there's this term that's been coined called the Lindy effect. And the term is this. If a show has been playing on Broadway for 60 days, then there's a good chance that it'll still be playing 60 days from now. Wow. If a show has been playing 3 days, there's a good chance that it'll be playing 3 days from now. But there is not a good chance it'll be playing 60 days from now. Right? Wow. It's like the longer something has been working, the longer it will work.
Ooh, I like okay? that. The Lindy effect.
Okay. And I stole that term from Nassim Nicholas Taleb. He's where I got that term from. He's got a book called Skinning the Game, which is really good. But things that have lasted a long time will last a long time. Yes. And things that are truly, truly new usually won't. Okay. Now, this is really important because with Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and WhatsApp and everything, you know, you can get the newest to the nanosecond, right? It's like, this was invented 18 picoseconds ago, and it is the greatest thing. And it's like, well, boy, I don't know. If you apply the Lindy effect to picoseconds, I don't know. You know, that, you know, you might want to wait and see if that has any longevity. Well, and there's all of these marketing books coming out, and there's all of these courses, and there's all of these videos and everything. And, okay, here's the problem with that is most of that advice is going to go stale like avocados. Like, how long does avocado last? Like, you cut that thing open all 25 minutes, right? I mean, And it's like gray. It's by the end of lunch, the thing's already turning gray, right? Well, you do not want your business advice to be like that. And the Lindy effect says that most business books, especially if they're new, you take a pass on them. So I'll give you a couple examples of this. In my book, Ultimate Guide to Google AdWords, which is the world's best-selling book on internet advertising, we have a whole bunch of chapters, and they have a sidebar on them, and it says, Advice from Uncle Claude. And Uncle Claude is Claude Hopkins, and he wrote a book called Scientific Advertising in 1918, which is now 101 years ago.
Yes.
Okay. And my contention is that almost everything in marketing was defined by Claude Hopkins in 1918.
Yes.
Okay. And it's Solomon said, there's nothing new under the sun. He didn't mean there's no such thing as an iPhone. That's not what it means. Okay.
Yes.
What it means is that all of the basic human problems have always been the same.
Yes.
Okay. And that if people were writing about divorces and remarriages on stone tablets, and then they were writing about them on newspapers, and they're going to be typing about them with their thumbs on iPhones, and they're still like the same problems. And the same business problems that people were having in 1918, people are having in 2019. And there's this great phrase by G.K. Chesterton. It says, news is old things happening to new people.
Ooh, I love that. That is seriously so cool. Now, what you just shared, it resonates deeply, like, with me, because I always think, what are the things that people have already solved? Do I need to reinvent the wheel? Speaking of stone tablets and stone and the Stone Age, there's so much that we can learn from old books, even if the tactics or the methods are just a little bit different. You know, do you know what? My favorite book about business isn't about business. It's The Art of War by Sun Tzu.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
oh yeah, babe. Yeah, I got a copy like right over there. In fact, we made it into one of our courses.
Really?
A couple of years ago. Yes. I mean, we don't. That's a whole long story I don't want to get on. But yes, like old books, I love old books. In fact, one of my core, like not just little dangling piece of advice, but one of my core beliefs is you should read something written before Gutenberg every day.
Ooh, I like that. You should read something by Gutenberg every day.
Something written before Gutenberg. So Gutenberg invented the printing press. So think about this. Okay, so If a piece of literature existed before the printing press, then that means the only way we got it was if scribes copied it by hand onto scrolls, hid them in urns, in caves, and then whatever we have prior to that point, it survived the sacking of Rome, it survived the burning of Alexandria, it's like, and all these wars and everything, and got filtered and filtered and filtered. And what all that stuff is like the 0.0001% that people felt was really, really, really valuable, right? So maybe we're talking about the Quran or the Bible or the Kama Sutra or Plato or Socrates or Seneca or whatever, okay? But like that is the enduring advice, okay? And so I just want you to think about, if you read one of these old books, when you read old books like that, like the really classic literature, there's two things about it. First of all, it runs at a totally different speed than the 21st century. Like there's a lot of poetry where you just have to sit with a couple of lines of poetry and kind of meditate on them. And if you're used to like waking up in the morning, reaching across your nightstand and pulling a device in front of your face and then reacting to stuff, this is a totally different RPM than that, okay? But I totally, really urgently serious here. I think the worst worst way to start your day is to grab your phone and pull it into your bed and start reacting to stuff. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you how I start my day.
Please do.
I get out of bed. I take a quick shower. I get myself a cup of tea and I sit down with a notebook and I write. Mm. And I write like whatever's on my brain. If I had a dream, if I had an idea in the shower, I pray, I meditate. I always read or at least contemplate something written before, like a Bible verse or a poem or a scripture or something like that. And only after I have, it's almost like breathing, like at slow speed, only after I've done all that and kind of gotten myself together and had my private personal space, only after that do I plunge into the day and start reacting to everything that's going on around. Wow. That is the best personal habit that I have cultivated in at least 20 years is that. Okay. Now, when you do that, when you operate that way and you don't start your day reacting to stuff, several things happen. First of all, see, when you wake up in the morning, your incredibly amazing, sophisticated, your mind, your soul, this, what the, if you want to call your body machine, it's really more than that, but this exquisitely fine-tuned machine, there's all this stuff that has bubbled up to the surface. Your brain, your subconscious has been processing things all night. We all know if you don't have REM sleep and you don't dream, you'll go crazy. You're processing all that. Okay, I think when you take your shower, the idea comes to you in the shower, right? You go write it down, you do all that. Maybe you had a dream or something, or maybe an insight came to you. You write all that down. It's like you skimmed the cream off the top and you put it, you know, in a glass bowl so you could put it in your refrigerator and, you know, use it later. If you just start reacting to social media in the morning, it's like you skimmed all that cream off the top and you just dumped it on the floor. And okay, it's like you need to access the intelligence and the wisdom of your body and your spirit, because we all have these problems, and like the solution is not in a like, oh, should I take that client, or should I get involved in this project, or should I launch this new product? Like, the answer to that isn't in some textbook somewhere. Every situation is unique. And like, is this a good human being, or is this person kind of skanky? And like, there's all these things, right? So, oh, I'm telling you, it's such a different way of relating to the world. And I realize we haven't even talked a single thing about how to do marketing, but like, okay, so I greatly prefer the old books over the new ones, even if we're talking about internet marketing. Like, is Scientific Advertising by Claude Hopkins about internet marketing or not? An immature person thinks it's not. Mm-hmm. A mature person's like, absolutely. In fact, the skill of connecting the dots. Okay, he was putting newspaper ads and letters in the mail in 1918, and now we're doing this 10,000 times faster, but it's really actually all the same stuff. Wow. Because that's wisdom.
I love that so, so much. Now, to give some perspective to this, a lot of people that I am around every day, including myself, we don't remember a day before social media, which is so weird. I mean, I was brought up on MySpace and then made the switch to Facebook, and we're so used to being reactionary. It's very normal to us. And there's something almost countercultural in stepping back and processing versus just brain dumping on social media. It takes intentional effort. And while like you said, this doesn't have to do with marketing, I feel like this has everything to do with marketing. And so you've obviously been through a lot of different scenarios over the years. You've been through the great economic crash in 2007 through 2009. You've been through probably every problem that we've all encountered several times over. What kept you going through that time? What was your wisdom that you turned to during that?
Well, so there are two kinds of business mistakes that people make, okay? There are mistakes of tactic and strategy, and then there are mistakes of judgment and character. Okay, and they're completely different. Okay, so let me give you an example. So Lehman Brothers collapsed in 2008, or some people might remember Enron. Like Enron was like the biggest, it was like the biggest debacle on Wall Street or something, right? That, well, Enron, if you go back and look at it or watch the movie, it was like this big, big, giant pile of turds, okay? And it caved in. Okay, now, if you start a business and you get a bunch of investors and like you guys go buy an apartment complex and then the real estate market crashes and everybody loses all their money, people will be mad at you. But if your only mistake was the timing of the market and you did everything honestly and decently and everything, they'll eventually get over it and they'll be your friends. But if you do an Enron, they're not getting over it.
Wow.
They will never get over it. Okay. And if you look at people whose careers have collapsed, careers do, and some collapse permanently, right? Like that Weinstein guy that was groping women and like, you know, the movie guy, right? Okay. That guy, his career is over. It's done. Okay. Yes. He's never going to have a job like he had before. Okay. Whereas, you know, if you're an honest person and you just like, you make a tactical mistake or a strategic mistake, those are more forgiving. Okay. Well, all right. So then there's two kinds of business books. There's business books that deal with strategy and tactics, and they're like coming out our ears like every single day. Okay. And then there are books that deal with character and virtue and judgment. And there aren't very many of those. And like my favorite book is the book of Proverbs, which is in the Hebrew Bible, which it's like all of it's great business advice. I mean, absolutely, there's tons of great business advice, but it's all advice about judgment and character and wisdom. And it keeps you, it's not a book about how you balance a spreadsheet or how you buy clicks or anything like that. No, it's like, it's how you make decisions of a more moral and ethical nature, and how you spot people a mile away that are going to drag you into another Enron. And then you develop what I call discernment. Okay. Yep. And there isn't anything more valuable than wisdom and discernment.
Yes.
And they earn slow interest, but it's steady interest. And believe me, so let's say that we're talking to some like, you know, 23-year-old entrepreneur, and you know, maybe they went to college, maybe they didn't, but now they're running a flower shop, or they're running a video production studio, or they're running a social media agency or whatever. I just want you to imagine what happens if you, over the next 20 years, you resist the temptation to take the cheesy shortcuts and all of that, And what if by the time you get in your 40s, you are literally one of the most trusted people in your industry?
That's a game changer, without a doubt. Because most people, I think, take the shortcut. It's seemingly easier. It's, you know, it's getting liposuction over actually dealing with the root of the problem.
Yes. Right. Yeah, those crunches are a little harder, a little less pleasant.
Absolutely. Now, clearly, you have taken the long road. You've taken the long-term strategies. And I know that it's sometimes reflecting, you might feel like, well, not all the time, but obviously more often than not, you chose the path of long and slow gains because your name is very, very well respected. The moment I saw the email come through in my inbox, I was like, yes, yes, all the yes, yes, please. So I have to say my hat is off to you because most people at some point inevitably self-sabotage by choosing the short term. What kept you on the straight and narrow for almost 20 years in your career?
Well, I would say it was being grounded in King Solomon, if you will. It was like, you know, there's this like really common sort of story that you know in marketing. It's like, hey, you know, see that like market over there? Hey, there's a lot of money in that market. We're just going to run over there and we're going to make ourselves a quick fortune and then we're going to leave. And it's almost never true. Like, you know, there's a little grass is greener, right? Okay. So there's some of that going on. And then there's also, you know, like a certain amount of greed or, you know, and look, I think that I have to say, before I say negative things, I need to say this. I've consulted a lot of industries, and I actually think the marketer entrepreneur space is one of the best places that you can work. Okay, there's a lot of good people. There's a lot of positivity. There's a lot of abundance mentality. Entrepreneurs are inherently skin in the game kind of people. There's a lot of BS that never makes it to our door, right? And so, and I think marketers are wonderfully collaborative. We're not catty, we're not political, we're not like playing all these silly games. So I really like it. But you know, there are some mentalities in the entrepreneur space that I think are damaging. One of them is it's this like aversion to manual labor. Okay. Right. Well, everything has to be automated and, you know, and I'm just going to build this machine. I'm going to build this system and I'm going to make money while I sleep. And I'm not going to trade hours for dollars. Well, listen, at the end of the day, even Jeff Bezos is trading hours for dollars. Okay. Now he might be trading hours for $2 million an hour. which is pretty right. Impressive, right? But look, most things he does still aren't like permanent, okay? And I think one of the best things that you can do is roll up your sleeve and go help somebody solve a problem. Now, let me make this super practical. I had a guy come to me about 10 years ago, and he had created this software. And it was for business to business. It was for this very particular kind of a problem. And he had just about spent himself broke building and selling the software, which is very easy to do. Software is hard work. And he was almost bankrupt and his wife is ready to divorce him. And he's like really at the end of his rope. Mm-hmm. And what he wanted to do was just like sell these, I don't know if it was $500 a month or $10,000 for the software or whatever it was, but you know, he just wanted to sell his software. And so I started asking him questions. I'm like, well, okay, so how do you know this works? And how does you like, it was for these companies who had violated safety regulations, and they needed to get back into compliance is what it was. And it would also help them stay in compliance. Okay. So there's a marketing lesson here. There's prevention and there's cure.
Yes.
Okay. Well, so everybody knows that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. But there's a corollary to that, which is people will pay more for an ounce of cure than they'll pay for a pound of prevention.
Wow. Seriously.
And they'll pay you now.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh my
I'm having
gosh.
A coronary, and I will pay you $250,000 to make my heart like right now. Like there's this pain in my arm. Like right now, I will pay you. Okay.
Unbelievable. Yes, it's so
true. They won't take vitamins. They won't get on a treadmill. They won't go to Taekwondo. But man, it's like if they got the money, they'll give you every penny they got to make their heart attack go away, okay? I said, okay, listen, you've got customers or people you tried to sell this thing to. They have like some government agency breathing down their neck. They're getting fined per day for some, you know, out of compliance thing. Okay, so here's what you do. Here's how you sell your software. You like show up at their doorstep and you say, okay, for $15,000 a month or $3,000 a day or like some number, I will come into your facility. I will go through your factory with a fine-tooth comb. I will get you in compliance.
Mm.
Okay? When that guy in a dark suit shows up next Tuesday, you're going to be clean as a whistle. Okay? I said, what you do is you talk to every single person in every single department, you go through every single thing, and you fix their problem, and you collect a check. And while you're doing it, you use your software as much as you can. Now, here's what will happen. You're like, well, gee, Hank, how come you spent 86 hours helping this client? You only spent 3.5 hours on the software. Because the software doesn't do all that much yet, right? But, you know, then you take another one, and you take another one, you take another one, right? And by the time you've done this 8 different times and done a bunch of improvements to your software, you know, you could send a person from a temp agency in there with your software, and they could fix the whole thing, and they don't even need you, okay? That's how you're going to sell your software. Like, you're going to get there through a series of steps, but you start by showing up, solving a problem, and collecting the check, right? And boy, that is a recipe for almost any business, right? It could be, I mean, you could be making wireless microphones. Like, okay, go to the theater. So like I was in a theater show about a month ago, and you know how wireless microphones, like in the middle of the show, all of a sudden like, you know, and the microphone is like making this wireless interference and stuff. Okay, you get your ass to that theater and you make sure that that theater show goes perfectly, you know, and if you do that, you'll figure out like, okay, so what is the problem with this product anyway, right?
Right.
It's like skin in the game.
That alone right here, if anyone has been listening, that alone right there, we should have charged for this episode. No, just kidding. Like, but seriously.
Well, and you don't say,
yes.
Well, that's manual labor. I don't do dollars. I don't trade hours for dollars. I only build systems. Like, well, get your hours per dollars and build your system in the back room, right? Until you have a system, it's the only way you're going to work out all the bugs. It's the only way you're going to know so much about your customers. So it's like, well, I know why they're not buying this. Like, because, you know, like, you know how they think. You can finish their sentences, right?
Unbelievable.
That's how you get good at marketing.
That is absolutely phenomenal. Now, you've been through many phases of marketing. You are known as one of the greatest in guerrilla marketing and in AdWords, as well as Facebook advertising. In fact, you wrote the book on Facebook advertising. The Ultimate Guide to Facebook Advertising, correct?
Right. Yes.
And I'm willing to bet, based on this conversation, there are a lot of things that haven't changed. From platform to platform. Tell me a little bit about that.
Okay. So there you go, right? So we're back to Lindy effect, right? So it's like there's two layers. So you could go into Facebook Ad Manager right now, and they got this menu and this button and this feature, and right, and they'll change it next week, and they'll change it more the week after that, right? So that's one level, right? But then way down here, there's these universal principles. And so it's like, well, what are the universal principles of marketing? So let's just pick like three and that we can run with. So number one, enter the conversation inside your customer's head. Okay.
Yes.
You can never go wrong with that. Now, so let's break that down. What are they saying? So here's the litmus test for knowing the conversation inside the customer's head. Can you read them a page of their diary and it is so accurate that they can't stop reading because it's almost psychic, and it's talking about what they woke up this morning, you know, they opened their eyes and they thought to themselves, oh, I have this awful employee named Martha and she is so incompetent. And if I could just find a replacement for her, my life would be so much better. But I'm stuck with this woman right now. And like the lady wakes up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and this is literally the first thing she thinks, right? Well, if you sell employment services or if you're a headhunter or anything like that, then all you have to do is just enter that conversation and you have her attention, right? And then not only that, like, you take a big handful of salt and you just rub it in that wound, right? Well, remember yesterday when she was changing the coffee machine and she spilled coffee grounds all over the floor and it was $112 of coffee grounds and you had a line of customers and we had no coffee and like we have to drive to the roaster across town and then drive back and get it because like, I don't know, like she's so... like, and it's not because she like has a disease or anything. It's just she's so high strung and nervous that, right? And you describe this like crazy employee, right? Okay, so enter the conversation inside the customer's head. Okay, number two. So you know how Stephen Covey said, begin with the end in mind, and like that was the 7 habits of highly effective, begin with the end in mind. Okay, in marketing, begin with how you're going to measure the end.
Ooh.
How are we going to measure? Like, okay, we just hired somebody to manage our Google ads, which, by the way, is a very dangerous, risky thing to do because it usually goes wrong. Okay. How are we going to know that the ads are getting a good ROI?
Yes.
What are we going to measure? Well, we have to measure the dollars in. We have to measure the dollars out. How are we going to know that they actually came from the Google ads and they didn't come from somewhere else? Okay. So that's one that neither one of those ever changes. 5000 BC, 2019, same, right? Okay. Here's a third one, 80-20. 80-20 does not change, has not changed. It's been here since 5000 BC. 80-20 says 20% of what you do gets 80% of your results, and 80% of what you do only gets 20% of your results. Always the same. Well, it applies to almost everything. So 20% of your customers give you 80% of your money. 20% of your clients write 80% of the checks. 20% of the products get 80% of the sales. 20% of the product defects get 80% of the warranty returns.
Wow.
20% of the employees cause 80% of the disasters. 20% of the roads get 80% of the cars driving on them. Okay. And it's true in all the columns in your Facebook account. It's true in all the columns in your Google account. It's true in all the spreadsheets in your business. Well, so that means that the first question you go, well, what do I get rid of? Right. So I'll guarantee you that if you have any reasonable number of customers, you're losing money on 20% of them. The fastest way a going, operating, up and running business can be more profitable is to get rid of an unprofitable customer. I kid you not. And most people have unprofitable customers and they haven't quite figured it out. Or they thought, well, gee, aren't I morally obligated to keep this client? No. I gave a speech at this whole room full of certified public accountants one time. And I said, okay, how many of you have a client like this? They're always calling you like April 13, okay? And they have this giant shoebox of all these receipts, or worse than that, they don't even have a shoebox, like, because they're so disorganized, right? And they call you 18 times and they text you all the time and they email you all the time. And, you know, and they only pay you like $186 and they just chew. How many of you have that client? Everybody looks at me like, yes, I know that person. I said, okay, I, Perry Marshall, best-selling author, I bequeath you permission to fire the client. Okay. And you don't have to be mean about it. You could send them a letter. We had a director's meeting yesterday and we agreed that we're changing the direction of our business. And there's just some clients that we can't serve anymore. And so we're not going to be able to do your taxes in 2019 and we'll be happy to refer you to somebody else or help you get transferred over. But unfortunately we won't be able to do this. One of my roundtable members, roundtable is one of my high level coaching groups. She runs a tax advisory firm, and she heard me talking about this at our last meeting. So on her way home in the car, she calls her operations manager. She goes, get me a list of the revenue and profitability of all of our clients. And so they give her this list, and she took the bottom 20% and she sent them all a letter. She said, hey, we're changing our business and either we need to stop doing your taxes or the fees are doubled over what they were last year. And so whichever way you want to go, but that's just how we got to do it. And a whole bunch of them dropped off and quite a few of them actually just said, well, okay, I guess I'll pay the double fee. And she instantly made her tax practice 10% more profitable just like that. And notice less work.
Amazing. Now, my audience that's listening to this, many of them are newer entrepreneurs, newer marketers. They're growing for the very first time. And they don't believe that if you let go of the one, that there's more out there. What do you say to those people?
Well, of course, you shouldn't let go of them if you are actually making money. But, you know, there's like this law of the universe is thou shalt not lie to thyself. Okay. Like, well, yeah, I know you can tell yourself that you're making money, but when you actually factor, I mean, is it sort of like, you know, like a mom making minimum wage, putting her kid in daycare? Like, is it really like that? And like all the money is going to the daycare and really it's just a wash. Like, well, gee, if you're going to make zero money, you might as well at least have your kid in your house instead of, right. There's a lot of situations like that. Here's one of the things I've just found is that money goes where it is respected and cared for and where the rules of money are obeyed. Okay. When you say, this is almost a little metaphysical, but when you say no to bad money, it makes it easier for good money to flow to you. And I can't, like, I'm an electrical engineer by training, by the way. I mean, I'm a pretty logical, rational guy. I can't actually explain to you many times why it is that money works the way that it does. But one thing that money does not respond to is desperation. Money does not respond to need.
Wow.
Money responds to competence. It responds to good management. Money likes to go where it multiplies. Okay. So if you have a part of your business that's not multiplying money, it's just losing money, you need to cut it off.
I love that so much. Money multiplies when it's in a good space.
Yes.
Amazing. Yes. So basically, you just gave us all the recipe for a money growing tree in our backyards. Just go plant the money that you have, put it to good use, put in the hours, and it'll work, but not every single tree. 2 out of 10. Focus on the two.
And I want to, since we're talking to a lot of new people, let me just, so let me tell you a story that I got to imagine is going to be relevant to people. So my first true entrepreneurial marketing endeavor was multi-level marketing. I was an Amway pink Kool-Aid junkie for more than 5 years, okay? And recruiting people to recruit people to recruit people, I was like doing that. And I learned a lot of very valuable things from it. Now, in the end, it never really made any money. And I burned a lot of time and a lot of money, and it was unproductive. Well, I want to point out a pattern that you need to look out for, okay? So they would tell us, winners never quit and quitters never win. Okay?
Yes.
Like, you stay in this thing. Those losers who quit, you know, you're not a loser, you're a winner. Like that kind of thing. And there was also this message of, you know, this is your only chance. Like, this is your ticket. If you walk away from this, you'll probably be nobody. You'll probably be a nothing. You'll just go to the insipid droning of your dreary, desolate life, and you'll die broke, and like this sort of thing. It was very binary. Okay. Well, and you know, and they were always insulting your job, right? You know, you got to get rid of your job. Well, there's this basic truth about human beings is those who bite the hand that feeds them lick the boot that kicks them.
Ooh.
And, you know, the truth is all of the money for the Amway seminar tickets were from people's jobs. Okay. Where did the money come from? It came from them punching the clock. Okay. And, you know, when they would say winners never quit and quitters never win, look, in the entrepreneurial world, you need to learn how, you need to fail fast. You need to figure out as fast as possible whether an idea has legs or not.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay? Like, so if you start a restaurant, honestly, the easiest way to test your restaurant is to give the food away the very first day. You go, Mama's restaurant is opening on March 1st, and on a reservation basis, you can get up to $15 of
yes.
completely free food, and you put it, you spend all your advertising. And I'm sure the place will be packed on March 1st. The moment of truth will literally be on March 2nd. If they came back and they'll pay for that hamburger, then you've got a business, right? But one of the just tragic things that people do is they're so afraid of the truth that they just prolong the suffering. and they put off the moment of truth. Like they sit there, they work on the product and they work on the product and they work on the product, and then they still haven't sold it to anybody, and they still haven't sold it. You know what you should do? You show them a picture of the thing and you go, you write me a check for that right now. I'll give you 50% off and then we'll build it.
Wow. Yes.
And if nobody writes you a check, then next. You could save years. And going back, you should never accept business education from an abusive boyfriend.
Mm.
You know, if you didn't have me, you'd be nothing. That's just an abusive boyfriend. That's all that is. You get away from that guy like now.
But so many people hang on. And this goes back to the 80-20 rule. And in fact, speaking of the 80-20 rule, you wrote an entire book on it.
Yes.
Can you share with us a little bit about 80-20 sales and marketing?
This is it. 80-20 sales and marketing. I think if you're going to start reading Perry, start with this book. When I was learning Google AdWords the first time, you know, so eventually I wrote the book on Google AdWords, but one of the biggest epiphanies right about the time that I was learning that, I read the original 80-20 book by Richard Koch, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is everywhere. And what I figured out was, okay, this isn't really Google AdWords. This is just a spreadsheet game called 80-20. This is just, okay, so 20% of the keywords get 80% of the traffic. So my job is to sort from top to bottom and just focus on the top 20%. It's like you don't optimize 100% of a Google account. You optimize 20% of a Google account. And what you really do is you optimize the top 20% of the top 20% of the Google account. And so there are these little parts of it, and you meticulously obsess over them. And there are these other huge parts of it you ignore. If you are obeying 80-20, you will feel like you must surely be ignoring some really important thing. Yes. Okay. So that means there's phone calls you don't return. There's emails you don't reply to.
Wow.
There's products that you never finish. There's friends that you never manage to get together with, okay? Because you haven't seen your husband in 2 weeks. Like, gee, have we even talked to each other, ships passing in the night? Okay, so you don't respond to your sorority sister that you haven't seen in 5 years. You go out to dinner with your husband. That's 80-20.
I love this. I love the idea of saying, yes, there are opportunities, there are markets we might be missing, and that's okay. We're going to focus on where we see the greatest results.
It is totally okay to say no. In fact, 80-20 is saying no. In fact, marketing is not a convincing people process. It is a disqualification process. Before you decide who you are going to sell to, you need to decide who you're not going to sell to. You never sell to everybody. The first advice in Amway was, I'll show this thing to anybody that can fog a mirror. No. In fact, if you're new in marketing, and if any part of your business plan has anything to do with anybody that can fog a mirror, it's wrong. I just guarantee you, it's wrong, right? If it's not for some very specific kind of person in a very specific situation or a very specific location or a very specific like age or hobby or, and I mean, it should be narrow. In fact, the worst things to get into are things where everybody at the pub or at church or at school would know what that is. Those are the worst things. It's like you go, I'm going to start a coffee shop. Everybody knows what a coffee shop is. Almost guaranteed to be a bad idea. Okay? If you say, I'm making this up, by the way, this is hypothetical. I'm going to make 27-sided dice for Dungeons & Dragons players. Because you played Dungeons & Dragons so long that you know that nobody makes those, and they would actually be really cool. And there would, like, if you went to this one conference, like, the people at that one conference would be all over that thing. Okay, that's probably a good idea.
Wow.
Niches. You never, especially if you're new, you never go in business with just like everybody. That's like the fastest way to go broke. So sleep with one eye open.
Perry, this has been incredibly, incredibly insightful. Amazing. I mean, I was trying my best to not take as many notes as I could because I was like, I can transcribe this later, but I still took some notes as we were going. For those who are like, oh my goodness, I need to know more. Where can they learn more about you and your 80-20 book that every single person listening to this needs to read?
So this is what you should do. Go to sell8020.com, sell8020.com. It'll take you right to my website. It'll take you right to the page where we sell 80-20 sales and marketing for a penny plus shipping, which in the US is $7. And outside the U.S. is 14. And you should buy the book and you should read the book. You should probably read the book 3 times. But here's what you should also do. You should pay very close attention to what happens next and what happens next and what happens next. Pay attention to, okay, so after I bought the book, they wanted to sell me something else. How did they do that? And I get this email the next day, and I get this other email the next day, and I get this other email the next day. What is it that he's up to? Why did he put this together this way? And why did he send me here instead of Amazon? Which you can buy a thing on Amazon for $18. But why is it better to go buy it on Perry's website? You will learn a bunch of stuff. Don't listen to what I say. Watch what I do.
I love that so, so much. I'm honored that you joined me today. Perry, thank you.
I'm honored that you had me. This was fun.